Hey everyone, so my name is Jody Tom and I was graciously invited to be a part of The Conversation Has to Happen this year. And it's a cause that's definitely near and dear to my heart. So even though things look drastically different in the world of 2020, I honestly believe that this year it's more important than ever to talk about mental health. So many people are struggling because of isolation or stress, uncertainty, that thing called a global pandemic. So I just want to make sure that people are aware that even though I work in the field of addiction and mental health, and I have for over 13 years, I'm speaking today on a personal note. So I'm not here as a representative from the organization I work for, but I'm here to share my own story and my own journey with addictions and mental health and how the work that I've done has brought me to where I am today. So my hope is today that by sharing my story, I can reach even just one person out there who is struggling. Life can get to a place where it's pretty hopeless. And so if I can provide some hope or inspiration, then I feel like my job is done. It's difficult for me to kind of consider that my life is inspiring, but we'll just go from here and hopefully somebody can take some glimpses of my life and realize that there is a place of peace out there that we can all get to, as much peace as one can have with a four-year-old in the house. I was first diagnosed with depression in my early teens, probably around 13 or 14. And then throughout my teens, I was that typical rebellious teenager, defiant. I felt unloved and uncared for, even though that wasn't the case. I experimented with drugs and alcohol, and I guess in my late teens and early 20s, I definitely misused alcohol and was dependent on it. I dropped out of multiple post-secondary schools, or got kicked out. Really depends on who I was telling at the time. But in my late 20s, I made that decision to change the direction of my life. And at 29, I picked up, moved to a different town, went back to university. And that's really where my career in addictions and mental health started. So I'm going to fast forward to late 2014. So I'd been on and off medications, but had been off them for a couple years at this point. I was working as an addictions counselor, and then decided that my life needed some spicing up, I guess. So I started to get back into the dating scene and started going back to parties, and my alcohol use began to increase at that point. I felt like I had control of my life. It wasn't affecting my mental health, or I didn't think so at the time. On the odd occasion, I'd get high at a party, but wasn't really concerned about it. Then early 2015, so January 9th, 2015, my life really took a turn. So I was a victim of a pretty violent and horrific sexual assault, and I had a pretty standard response to that. So that I was thinking it was my fault. I put myself into the situation. I was intoxicated. But at the end of the day, these were not good men, right? And they threatened me, if I disclosed it to anybody, that my life would be in jeopardy. And these were men that had the means to follow through with some of those threats. And so because I had already kind of started getting back into the party scene, that's when I really fell hard into the drugs. So I took a short leave from my job, right, to get myself together. And I guess that is proof that no matter what you know, you have to be able to apply it to your life. And so I worked in addictions, but I had the information, but I just wasn't capable of implementing any of those strategies into my life. I couldn't think clearly. I was later diagnosed with PTSD. Couldn't focus. I had flashbacks. And I just wanted to be somebody else. So I started to use drugs daily. Got pretty involved in the drug scene. Hung around some pretty unhealthy people. Toxic, violent. But they supported my lifestyle. And I didn't have to be Jody, the victim of a sexual assault. When I was with them, I could be whoever I wanted to. So I really didn't care about myself or anything to do with my life anymore. I was pretty messed up at that point. My family was urging me to go to a private therapy retreat, which I did when they asked me to. And then when I got back from that, I just jumped back into my work, which wasn't the best thing for me. So I was far from healthy. And when you work with a bunch of people who are specialized in addictions and mental health, they can pick up on that, right? And so my coworkers saw that I was really struggling, and I was placed back on leave. So I was basically told to get my act together before I could come back to work. And how that was delivered to me, I just felt like my life was crashing. So I was pretty miserable. And that night that I was sent home from work, I didn't want to go on anymore. I felt like I had failed at life. I was hopeless. I was worthless. And I just wanted it all to end. And I was suicidal off and on throughout that whole year that I was kind of on a bender. I was using drugs. I was in and out of different toxic relationships. I didn't care. I was depressed. I was scared. I distanced myself from everybody who was healthy in my world. So I lost a lot of friendships. I lost a lot of self-respect. And I just felt like I was crawling. I needed to crawl out of my own skin. I wanted to run away from myself. But no matter where I went, I would always still be there. It was pretty overwhelming. Pretty dark place in my life. That being said, there were a few good people that never gave up on me. And I'm not sure I'd be here if I didn't have those people in my life. So I'm super grateful for them. I was working with a psychologist who I never felt judged when I went in. I met with her once a week for that whole year. She never turned me away if I was high when I showed up. She never turned me away if I was detoxing throughout our appointment. She didn't judge me. She just accepted me as I was in whatever state I was. And that compassion was a pivotal thing for me, right? And so, and I also had a couple friends who would check in on me now and then and just let their presence be known that I was there if they were there for me if I ever needed them. So those are the people that really made a difference in my life. And now I can recognize how privileged I was to have those people. So this, the Conversation That Has to Happen conference has a belief that we are each other's greatest resource. And I totally believe that that's true. We don't have to necessarily be a therapist or a counselor, or we just have to be a friend and be compassionate. And sometimes we have to leave our own values and morals at the door and just listen and support somebody where they are and how much of a difference that can make, right? So I was respected when I didn't feel respectable, and I was loved when I didn't feel lovable. And the power in those short and fleeting moments was really important in my journey. So, but I guess we'll skip ahead a little bit again until late September of 2015. That's when I was able to kind of stop using drugs and alcohol. And at that time, I had no intention of remaining sober, but I had made some progress in therapy. I was on some meds that were kind of helping my depression, and my PTSD symptoms were less and less frequent. And so I figured, you know, I'd give the sobriety thing a try for a little bit and see how it works. So I gained some strength in my ability to manage my mental health there. I was still involved in a really unhealthy and toxic relationship and hanging out with some not so healthy people, I suppose I'd say. And about the time I was getting the urge to get high again and to use and to just say screw it with sobriety, really, I found out I was pregnant. So I don't know if you can imagine the shock of an unexpected pregnancy at the age of 37. It was no joke. What the heck was I going to do, right? Like, I was in this pretty strange place in my life. I was, you know, distanced from family. I was felt really alone. The father of this baby was incredibly unstable, and became even more unstable once I found out I was pregnant. And so there were threats on my life, intimidation, and that went on for months. But that day I found out I was pregnant was another day that I was actively suicidal. I was ready to end it because how could I bring a child into this toxic world I was living in? How could I ever be a good mom with some of the things that I had done and been through? And like all these, I just was being really hard on myself, and I didn't think I'd be able to give this little person, if he got there, a chance in the world. And so one night I just impulsively called my parents out of the blue and just blurted it out, like, I'm pregnant. I probably talked to them once a month at that point. It was really not very often, and they're good people despite me thinking that they didn't love me or care for me. I was expecting the worst when I made that phone call, though. I thought they'd be ashamed of me. I felt like I was a 15-year-old who was, you know, going to be turned away from her parents. And I was very, very vulnerable. But the most incredible thing happened at that point, and they embraced me. So they let me know it's something that I wouldn't have to do on my own. My father was over the moon excited about the possibility of another grandchild. And they immediately just said, you can come home and we'll help you raise this child. So at that point I made the decision to have my child and go through with the pregnancy. And right now I consider him to be like my miracle child. I feel like he saved my life. He brought me closer to my family, and we're super tight now. He gave me the inspiration and motivation to stay sober. I was planning my relapse within days after I realized I was pregnant. And I'm not here to say that getting pregnant or having children is a motivating factor for everybody. I feel like I was just privileged in how he gave me the motivation to want to do better and be a better person for myself so that I could be a parent. I have no other children. And this was something that was super important to me. So I'm not here to judge others who continue to use when they're pregnant or as a parent. Everybody needs to come to a place where they can figure that out on their own. So the threats and the abuse carried on. I was always, you know, for months after I got pregnant, I was always kind of watching over my shoulder wherever I went. But I was able to sell my house and I moved in with a really healthy family friend. My psychiatrist signed me off to return to work. But that didn't mean that everything miraculously became amazing in my life. So the gravity of what I had done in the past year and everything that was going on really kind of hit me. I'd lost a house to drugs. I was left in debt. I lost friendships. I lost respect of coworkers. I lost myself. I didn't do anything I enjoyed anymore. And honestly, the pregnancy was one of the most difficult things I've ever had to do. It was not for the faint of heart. It was difficult and it was riddled with health concerns. But somehow, some way, I just took it a day at a time and I remained focused. I worked hard at keeping my head above water, I guess, so to speak. And every day I was reminded that this little human that was growing inside me would only have one parent. He only had me. I chose to have him on my own with no involvement from his father, no financial support or contact with his bio dad. And that kind of is what everybody thought was for the best at that time. And still today, I think I made the right decision. So I have the support of family, and this kiddo is loved by so many. And family goes beyond blood, for real. So I guess where I am now is 5 years later since I sobered up. And when I talk about being sober, by 12-step standards or an abstinence-based model, I'm not sober. But since September of 2015, I have not touched my drug of choice. I've remained sober from that one substance that was going to kill me. The way it messed with my mental health, and it was going to kill me. By no means am I perfect. I still have cravings, even 5 years later. I often turn to food to cope. I mean, 4.5 years after I had my son, I don't think I can use baby weight as an option anymore. But we all have things to continue to work on. I struggle when I'm exhausted or overwhelmed. I have daily reminders, though, that I don't want to go back to where I was, and I need to stay aware of my well-being. So I guess now, my hope is that I can offer the same care and compassion to other people that was shown to me at one of the worst times of my life. Made me feel like my life mattered, and that I could go another day, right? And so I want to hopefully help other people recognize even just a sliver of hope and worth in their lives. So I guess my passion is just supporting others. I'm driven to advocate for those people that don't have a voice of their own or don't think that they have a voice. I value harm reduction. And so I think when I was seeing my psychologist back then, if she had told me I have to sober up or I have to do this or I have to do that, I likely wouldn't have gone back to see her. Or if she had turned me away at the door and said, you're high today, so I'm not going to have this appointment, we'll have to reschedule, I would not have gone back. So she showed me that I deserve to be present in my life and in the lives of others, right? So a certain song on a radio or a smell or, a feeling can trigger a craving or an urge to get high. But I've also learned and strengthened a lot of healthier coping skills. I'm not going to say I'm never going to use again, but I have a strong resistance. I've built up a strong resistance to relapse. And I have this little human who calls me mom, who deserves for me to try to be the best version of me as I can, right? He's a innocent and a really great byproduct of a really hard time in my life. So I guess now I just want to give that hope and that inspiration back to other people who are struggling. So whether I can do that through my job and help people on their journey, or whether, and often cracking wildly inappropriate jokes at the worst possible moments, or whether it's smiling at someone walking down the street, or today sharing my story of where I've been and where I am now, I have a good life. I have the hope that things can change and get better. And our minds lie to us and tell us that people would be better off without us. If I had followed through with any of those suicidal thoughts 5 years ago, the world would not have this little 4-year-old person who's a bright light in the lives of so many people. So I still get remorseful and I still experience shame at some of the things that I experienced or went through when I was using at that point in my life. But I also remind myself that I'm stronger. I'm a healthier version of that person. And I'm working my ass off not to repeat the past. So a couple realizations that I just wanted to share before I wrap things up is one of them is that there's a very good possibility that I'm going to be on antidepressants and medications for the rest of my life. And so the way I see it is that if my brain isn't going to produce those appropriate chemicals, then I'll supplement them. And that's okay. And that's something on my journey, right? I think that recovery is unique to everybody. And we need to figure out what's going to work for us. So one of the reasons I feel more capable of dealing with life, I think, is because of the balance of chemistry in my brain. And so another realization is that I can't look too far in the future, or I get too overwhelmed, and I get there are times where I just want to give up if I'm obsessing over things I have no control over. So I need to just concentrate on what I'm doing now and, you know, in the near future. I have goals and stuff, but I just have to concentrate on what I have control over. So I guess that's the snapshot into my life. It's just one person's experience. So again, going back to every journey is unique, and there's no one formula that will work across the board in regards to recovery from mental illness or substance use. But there are people out there, myself included, that can help you figure out what you need to do to get to a place of peace in your heart or in your mind, right? So there are lots of resources out there, and I think that's important to say. If you feel like you need some support, the thing is they're not going to come to you necessarily, right? And so when you feel like you're a burden, or you feel like that phone is weighing 1,000 pounds and you're isolated, just make one call. You'll realize that there's more love and support and understanding out there in the world than your depression wants you to believe. So there's the AHS Mental Health Helpline, which is 1-877-303-2642. The Addiction Services Helpline is 1-866-332-2322. There's NA and AA meetings that have recently gone back to in-person in town. There's SMART Recovery Program. But there's also just that friend you haven't talked to for a couple months, or that family member who you feel will judge you, and they might not, right? We can't believe everything we think. Yeah, so I guess I just want to thank you for listening to me today, and I really just want to thank those people out there that support me on the daily, that listen to my messed up stories of what a unconventional parent I am, and who give me the will to keep going. So hopefully somebody out there who's listening and you're struggling, just reach out for help. Thank you.